By the way, the word mason can be deceiving. Don't think for a second that the masons in their lodges, they have building tools, hammers, chisels, nails, vice grips, and the like. The teacher, continuing his initiation, says, and pay attention here, the most significant characteristic of Gnosticism is the doctrine of a two-person God. To the Gnostic, God has two persons. This knowledge takes into consideration two origins, good and evil, or better yet, spirit and matter, another expression by which these two persons or origins reveal themselves. So godliness has two forms. We could visualize a body with two faces, one good and one evil, somewhat of a two-faced God or two gods. According to Gnostic thought, the teacher continues, God is a supernatural being, invisible and made manifest by two totally opposite qualities. One of these two qualities or faculties, the creator or the architect of the universe, created the earth and fashioned men. Unfortunately, the other faculty also took part in this creation, and the other faculty of godliness, an enemy of the source of good. And why is that? Gnosticism does not give any explanation. It has no answers. It simply limits itself to the acknowledgement of this unquestionable fact, unquestionable to them, being that good and evil coexist in nature, and therefore the second participates in the creation of the world. Truly, my friends, Gnosticism has never succeeded to solve the problem of the source of good and evil. And this is true. They don't know how to approach it. They cannot answer it, so they don't answer it at all. You see how and why they fabricate all these myths to try to explain a few things. And the teacher continues, but the Gnostics hoped, and the Freemasons after them also hoped. So here, the Masons call themselves the natural descendants of the ancient Gnostics. So here, this is very obvious. There's no room for doubt whatsoever. So the Freemasons hope that a higher spirit will free humanity someday from the yoke of matter. So the Masons do not believe that Christ is our deliverer, but Christ did not come to deliver us from matter. And here comes the knockout punch to the Gnostics. God is not opposed to matter or the body, but the eternal spirit became matter. He took on a human body. He became man. And he came to save and deliver this matter, and not to deliver us from matter. Do you see now, my friends, the destructive positions of these heresies? Yesterday, I was listening to a religious program on the radio between 7 and 7:30 at night. And at some point, I only listened for about 5 minutes, some point towards the end, one of the commentators who was speaking about funeral services and souls and the place of the soul, and he happened to mention that the souls go back to their original place where they came from. What place? And where is this soul center place that emails souls back and forth? This is an ancient Greek delusion. This is a Platonic falsehood. Souls do not pre-exist. But what can someone say in this world of terrible delusion? So getting back to the Masonic ritual, the Masons hope for a higher and superior spirit to free humanity from the yoke of matter. And this hope is a simple hope or a feeling of progress. Hopefully, the future will give the answer to this question. However, progress, this slow influence of the spirit, which will save humanity, must be helped by the human effort, and especially from the Masons. regardless of what the Christian leaders say, popes and patriarchs, that is, Gnosis, was never a heresy, but the philosophy of Christianity is a heresy. This is terrible. They call Christianity a heretical philosophy. If Gnosis did not live on, at least it was instrumental in the deterioration of the other religions, on the tombs of which Christianity founded its dynasty. And from this, we see the hope of the Masons or Neo-Gnostics, their hope to destroy all religions and especially Christianity and Orthodoxy. And the teacher continues his initiation. Gnosis, or knowledge, came at a time of a universal collapse of beliefs and ideas. This is true. It did well with the polytheists and idolaters. It stated to them that you no longer have a philosophy of religion. You're only left with mythology and skepticism. So Gnosticism rendered these systems useless. To the Jews, it taught their revelation is incomplete since it only springs forth from only the one divine person being the work of a single source. So you don't know the ultimate being and you don't know how to interpret his law. A proof of this serves the fact that you are still awaiting a Messiah to deliver you from your estranged and deteriorated civilization. Simply put, since you speak about one God, your revelation is incomplete, because God is also the evil God. The proof of the existence of the evil God is that you are expecting a Savior to save you from evil. What evil? Nature. Do you see how they place their thoughts? Now, to the Christians, Gnosis was saying, your leader was the highest manifestation of genius. This is true, but the apostles did not understand his teachings, and their disciples altered their writings, which were left to them. Therefore, Christianity is useless because it does not represent what Christ taught. According to them, Christ was a great Gnostic and a great Mason. This is precisely why Freemasonry, the only true religion, having assumed the work of Gnosticism, will succeed to destroy the false religion starting from the Roman heresy. By this, they mean the Church of Rome, because these lodges are in Western Europe, and their obvious enemy was the Church of Rome. For years, the Western European Masons overlooked Orthodoxy. They always attacked Rome, especially when Orthodoxy was enslaved by the Turks, the Ottoman Empire, but now they are very aware of Orthodoxy, and they are not very happy that it has lasted for 2,000 years. They want to destroy Orthodoxy and Christianity as well. So Masonry took the mission of Gnosticism, and as Christians, we will fight against Masons because you, the Masons, are under the name of Jezebel, and we will continue to fight against you. My friends, this is what they write in their instruction manuals, and you clearly saw that they are children of Gnosticism. I've told you this many, many times, and I'm going to continue to repeat it. Masonry is Gnosticism. And having been given this opportunity from the Book of the Revelation, I especially underline this. We must also add that Gnostics used to worship Cain. They're followers of Cain. They also venerated Canaan, the grandson cursed by Noah, Esau, who did not get Isaac's blessing, Korah, who rebelled and spoke back to Moses, Bathram and Abiram. These are the people that argued with Moses, and the earth opened up and swallowed them. All this in the Old Testament. They also venerate all of the above peoples you mentioned, but especially from the New Testament, they venerate Judas the Iscariot, who betrayed the Lord. They looked at the betrayal as an act of philosophical virtue. Do you know why? because they simply believe that the men of the Old Testament were people of Yahweh, the Lord, and therefore followers of the bad God, the evil God, because this evil God created matter, created the natural world, and due to this, he's an evil God. However, those that rebel against the followers of the bad God are Cain, Canaan, Esau, Korah, and all the others, the ones that we mentioned. Anyone who rebelled against the God of the Old Testament is a great hero for the Gnostics because they came to oppose the people of God who worship the bad God, the creator of matter, the creator of the universe. But pay attention to this. Cain is the father of civilization in the Old Testament. And this is their boast, their pride and joy. The Masons love Cain because he's the man who venture out to search and gain knowledge, civilization. Where Abel and Seth were losers. They were halvadas, as we say in Greek. The Masons don't want them because they are people of faith. Do you understand now the concept, knowledge versus faith? Knowledge turns against faith. But Christ introduced faith, and Judas, by his betrayal, wanted to kill this phenomenon of faith. And he did this to promote knowledge, which was the weapon of the Gnostics. This is why they honored Judas. And moving ahead to the initiation of the 18th degree, which is called the Rosicrucians, there the symbol of the initiation is a cross surrounded or encircled by roses. For someone who has no clue about these matters, this cross may appear most articulate and even beautiful. There's an inscription on this cross with Latin letters, I-N-R-I, and again, someone could think, well, that's easy enough, Jesus of Nazareth, King of the Jews. Well, it does not mean this at all. For those outside of Masonry, maybe, but not for the Masonic disciples. The teacher says to the 18th degree disciple, read this, I-N-R-I, and the disciple answers, Igne natura renovatur indegna. Nature is renewed totally through fire. So this cross has nothing to do with Jesus, the Nazarene King of the Jews. But the fire renovates nature completely. But this was a teaching of the Stoic philosophy. This is also taught by materialism. If you would open the small philosophical dictionary of communism, you will find this definition. How does nature renew itself? Nature always existed, exists, and it will always exist as an eternal fire. This is Stoic philosophy. The communist philosophers borrowed this from the Stoics. So this is the cross of the Rosicrucians. There's even more, and I read from the manual. The cross, having been an object of worship, was not only the simple image of the equinoxes, when the sun, during its annual path, covers these two points successively. So this was not the only meaning of the cross for those initiated. So the cross is the symbol of the two equinoxes, and the rose is the most excellent emblem of the woman. It symbolizes the woman. And as the cross symbolizes masculinity or the sun, the rose symbolizes the woman. The cross on Sara, the Egyptian cross, use those jewelry quite often in our days. This cross is like the letter T, lowercase t, and a circle. It has a circle on top. These are the reproductive organs of men. Forgive me, but that's what the Egyptian cross symbolizes. So the cross, according to the Masons, is the symbol of masculinity, or the symbol of the sun, which fertilizes the earth. Osiris was the sun, and Isis, the goddess earth. So the earth is fertilized by the sun, and gives birth to Oran, or men. And this is Egyptian idolatry. This is the cross of the Rosicrucians, which symbolizes masculinity, or the sun, in all its dynamics. The combination of these two symbols, cross and rose, express the union of the sexes, which is the symbol of the universal renaissance or rebirth. Do you remember about the letter G being Genesis or generation, along with geometry and God? Well, this is what it means. So they have nothing to do with the cross of Christ. Leo Taxil, in his book Masonry, page 238, writes, "My friends, Masonry is Gnosticism beyond a shadow of a doubt." And this is most clear. This is not surprising, then, that the ancient Gnostics worshipped Cain and the ancient serpent. So today's contemporary Masons worship Satan. This is not surprising. But the Masons come and prove us wrong. They worship Satan, and Christ reveals this to us. The Gnostics, according to Leo Taxil, along with today's Masons, recognized as the beginning of good, Lucifer, the devil, and as beginning of all evil, Sabaoth. Therefore, the God of the Old Testament is the bad God. He introduced evil by creating matter. The devil, Lucifer, is the good spirit, the good God. Isn't this shocking? And thus, they have this prayer for the devil. "Come, Lucifer, come. You who the priests slander, come. Come so we can embrace you to hold you tight in our arms. We know you for a long time, and you also know us before a long time as well. In the darkened eyes of the plain masses, your works do not always look beautiful. Your works don't always look good, all you blessed of our hearts. But only these can explain the laws of the universe. Without your works, O Satan, the universe would be nonsensical. Only you revitalize, only you produce work, only you refine the commonwealth. You seal virtue. To you belongs the beginning. To you belongs the throne. You, O Adonai," Adonai is our God, the God of the Old Testament, and they turn against him. "You, O Adonai, God of plunder and God of injustice, we deny you. You hate science, but we prevailed and possess science in spite of you. You hate happiness, but we will earn it through science in spite of you. Each one of our progresses is a triumph under which your divinity is. Spirit of lies and delusion, your kingdom is over. Seek victims among the animals. You already have been destroyed and deteriorated. Your name, which up to now was the last word of the wise, the authority of the judge with the oaths, the power of the rulers, the hope of the poor, the refuge of the penitent, the evildoer, your name, which is unutterable for us, from now on, it will bring the scorn and the anathema of men. It will be erased, and it will be progressively forgotten. It will remain as the synonym of hypocrisy, lies, superstition, tyranny, and misery." Only the devil can talk like this. These people are really demon-possessed, as you can see. "As long as humanity continues to bow down before your terrible, monstrous statues, humanity will be the slave of kings, priests. Humanity will suffer and wither." This is why the three virtues, the model of the French Revolution, liberty, equality, and brotherhood, has been said to be of Masonic origin. "As long as men will swear in your hateful name, the breaking of the oaths will be the foundation of society. Go away, get lost, O executioner of our logic, menace of our conscience." And here Leo Taxil adds that the Masons of the 33rd degree kneel in front of Baphomet, a statue of Satan, who is raised above the altar. And he's none other than the great architect of the universe. So the great architect of the universe, Baphomet, is the devil. This is who the Masons worship. And by the way, pay attention here. This is not revealed immediately as the disciples of Masonry climb little by little and they are approaching the gates of the 33rd degree, which is the last and final degree. Then they will become participants to the great secret of Masonry. The great secret of Masonry, and that's exactly what we're talking about, the great secret of Masonry is that the great architect of the universe is the devil. And that's what the Masons need to worship, and not the God of the Christians, whom the Masons must destroy at all costs. This, my friends, encompasses the deep secrets of Masonry. Again, Masons of the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th degree, they have no clue about these things. They simply go through some rituals, and if the Masons see that they are not very progressive and they are not the type that they want to promote, then they do not promote them. Once again, the deep secrets of Masonry is the worship of the devil and the persecution and the humiliation of the Holy Triune God of the Christians. And now let's ask ourselves, is it or is it not true what the Lord reveals in his epistle to the Bishop of Thyatira, that this teaching comprises of the deep things of Satan? This is precisely why we dealt with Gnosticism and Masonry. And especially since Masons circulate very freely in our church, especially here in the U.S., they become council members, they join the ranks of the priesthood, and I better not say any more. But my friends, our time is up, and I will close with a couple of thoughts. Today, we celebrate the feast day of our holy orthodoxy. And we must come to the realization that we are dealing with a monstrous enemy, Masonry, a great enemy indeed. Please open your eyes. The ancient fathers of the church turn against Gnosticism with all their might. Today, we must turn against Freemasonry, the newer manifestation of Gnosticism. In this, we receive much help from the Holy Script of the Book of the Revelation and the revealing statement of the Lord that we are dealing with the depths of Satan. My friends, we should be horrified in the midst of these realities. We must also add that in the event that some uninformed people found themselves in the tantalizing web of Masonry, either out of ignorance or delusion, or out of financial need, we are called to ask them and all those future victims to flee quickly from the lodge. We need to help these deluded souls by all means. But the faithful must watch as well. The faithful should not be shaken when these enemies of the church strive with every method to influence people and push their will on the church. The Lord, as the sender of the last epistle to Pergamos, declares, "These things says he who has the sharp two-edged sword." And he foretells and warns his enemies, the Satanists, "Repent, or else I am coming to you quickly, and I will fight against them with the sword of my mouth." These are the same words that St. Paul writes for the coming of the Antichrist and his name and the lawless one. Because Masonry is a forerunner of the Antichrist, whom the Lord will consume with the breath of his mouth and destroy with the brightness of his coming. My friends, Satan is real and is working full time. Is working with the most horrible means against the Church of Christ, and especially the Orthodox Church. Let's not forget that Satan has his residence and his throne here on earth. Let's not forget that Satan has his synagogue. Let's not forget that Satan has the deep things of his maliciousness, Knowing all this, let's stand well, let's keep sober and vigilant.
Of all the elected officials are also people who are not Christians, anti-Christians. The ACLU in 1962 forced prayer out of schools. Separation, church and state. But we do not have that. It is really separation of Christianity and state. You know why? Because to this day, Muslims could go in the classroom and teach about Mohammedanism. They bring Hindus in, no problem. Not a problem. You can have books of the Quran and Eastern philosophy, humanism in the libraries. The only book that's illegal in American school libraries is the Bible. The only book in the name of free press. However, now there's someone else in the classroom of American schools. The homosexual agenda. They are now teaching our children that gay is okay and normal. And we need to touch on this as well. So the ACLU, it's a left front that pushes anything anti-Christian down people's throats. Any movie that's anti-Christian, not a problem. But the minute Jerry Falwell gets up and he says the Antichrist will be Jewish, all of a sudden, this is not free speech. This is anti-Semitism. And the poor guy gets a few phone calls and he recalls it. He says, oh, I didn't mean that. I know you're going to cut off my loans. So I didn't mean that. I'm not anti-Semitic. And this is how they work, with fear tactics. Any preacher that says anything against Israel is finished. People for American Way. Norman Lear is their president. All they do is they videotape Christian preachers all day long. And anybody who goes against them, they destroy them. Radicalism is promoted by the media. See, anything anti-Christian, they're not really interested in gays, they're not interested in these things,